upon particularly Peter. And at the end of the little bit that we read, the commentator there in Luke says, so the fishermen pulled up their boats on the shore, they left everything and followed him. They left everything and followed him. Read me some words from Luke 14. And it says this in verse 25. Large crowds were travelling with Jesus. And turning to them, he said, if anyone comes to me and doesn't hate his father and mother, his wife and children, his brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Anyone who does not carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Will he not first sit down and estimate the cost to see if he has enough money to complete it? For if he lays the foundation and is not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule him, saying, this fellow began to build and was not able to finish. Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Will he not first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he's not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off, and he will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, any of you who does not give up everything he has cannot be my disciple. Salt is good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is fit neither for the soil nor for the manure pile. It is thrown out. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. And going into chapter 15. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear him, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. Then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbours together and says, rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep. I tell you that in the same way there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. Or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Does she not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully till she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbours together and says, rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin. In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. Jesus goes on to talk about the parable of the lost son, or the prodigal son, as it's called, as well in this particular chapter. So chapter 15 talks about loss. It talks about a sheep that's lost, a coin that's lost, and a son that's lost. These verses that we've just read from chapter 15 concentrate on the experience of loss. The writer's talking about possessions, property, and people. The sheep, the coin, and the son. Most of us know what it feels like to lose something. A few weeks ago I was explaining to you that it's not an unusual expression to be lost in terms of needing direction. When we're out in the car, or we're out walking, or we're trying to find a place that we've not been to before, it's very easy to get lost. But it's also a very common experience to lose something. Now, there are various things that you can lose. You can be on the losing side in a team. You can lose a game. It's not nice sometimes to be beaten by somebody else. There are other things you can lose as well. You can lose out on opportunities. something that may have taken you in a different direction. I remember my father-in-law once telling me he had an opportunity to go to Australia and start a new life, to emigrate on the other side of the world, and he didn't take that opportunity. That was an opportunity for him to take. To bring it up to date, we have the Brexit question going round. A decision that has far-reaching consequences. Some people see this as a positive opportunity to leave the EU, and some see it as loss. Some see this leaving, this giving up, has been quite negative. If you ever lose something that's particularly precious to you, you have a sense of anxiety over it. If you lose something that isn't particularly precious but it's important, like your bus pass or your car keys or your house keys, there's some anxiety, isn't there? Where did I lose it? Will it turn up again? Then there's the other kind of loss, sadly, that some of us have experienced, and that's the loss of a person. We know that people lose touch with people, but also people separate, get divorced, and of course people die. And in those cases, someone that's close to us, someone that we've relied upon, someone that's been a big part of our lives, that loss raises the question how we will be able to cope, how will we be able to learn to live without this person, adapt our lives. And there is some great challenges in that. Some people that you will talk to say that they have lost part of themselves. These verses from Luke 15 concentrate on the experience of loss. And it's interesting that the writer places these directly after a piece before this which talks about cost. It talks about the cost of following. As I said to you when we looked in Luke 5, the disciples, the fishermen, dragged their boats upon the shore. They left everything and followed. There wasn't a case of counting the cost for them. They were prepared to give it up to follow Jesus. And I think when we look at this question of loss in chapter 15, we have to look at it through this particular focus of cost, of what's been said in the earlier verses. I started out by saying that there were large crowds travelling with Jesus. Jesus is addressing a large crowd of people. And we know that where Jesus went, large crowds generally followed him. But Jesus says, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." He focuses away from the large crowd and focuses right down to the individual person in that large crowd. And that's how Jesus operates. He talks to the individual. He goes beyond the crowd and looks at the individual, and he says to the individual, "Are you prepared? Do you understand what it's going to cost you?" He uses some examples. He talks about building something, sitting down, working out the cost of that building, working out how much is going to go into that building. And he says, if you're not prepared to do this and you don't have that money together to be able to finish it, don't start building it. And he talks about fighting as well. He talks about a king who's making plans to fight another king and another kingdom. And once again, he says, be prepared to consider whether you'll be able to do this, whether you have enough raw resources to be able to bring this deliverance to your people. And if you don't, go and find terms of peace. So we have building and we have fighting and we have kingdom principles here at work. Building anything for the kingdom of God, fighting for the kingdom of God, there must be a consideration. It can't be something that you do and then later on say, "Ah, I don't think actually I can see this through." You've got to be really honest with your commitment, Jesus is saying here. Be really honest. Work it out and say, "Yeah, I can do this," or "No, I can't do this." Go beyond the emotional. As people of faith, we are asked a question when it comes to following Jesus. I want to bring back to the Brexit question again. Okay? Sorry about that. A lot of people are examining this question of Brexit. Right? So what you have is an initial emotional response. People are emotionally allowed to vent their particular view. And there's a lot of emotion involved in the action. And people seek freedom and say, "I want this." And they decide yes or no, whatever that decision was. A polar decision. And some people emotionally said, "I want to get out and I want to exercise my right to be free." Then, after that's done, we put the decision into the hands of the politicians and the key negotiators, the people who have to sit down and do this working out and considering of all the advantages and the disadvantages and the economics and what it's going to cost and what we will gain from it and all of that. Because you have to be really honest with your commitment, don't you? Your commitment to something. And guess what? After a while, these politicians and negotiators started to come back to the people and said, "Have you considered the cost of this decision? Have you considered what it will mean to leave the European Union? Are you sure you really want to go? Do you want to have another vote? Do you want to reconsider completely? Do you realise what we will lose?" Most of the political commentators will be saying this. Most of the politicians will be generally saying, "There's a loss here. Have you considered it?" Jesus was trying to put forward to this large crowd of people the real cost of being a disciple of Jesus, of being willing to submit and to share all that we have as needed. He says, "In the same way, any of you who does not give up everything he has cannot be my disciple." The fisherman gave up everything, it said. I just want to be clear to read that. So they pulled their boats upon the shore, left everything, and followed him. In the same way, any of you who does not give up everything he has cannot be my disciple. What is everything? What is the loss, the giving up of everything? Well, it's got to be more than an emotional response, it seems to me. Many people have an emotional response to something. They say, "That makes me feel better. That's the right thing to do. That's how I'm going to live my life." But once the emotion cools down, the reality of that lifestyle kicks in. And then people start to say, "I'm not really sure, actually. I'm not really sure." You have to be really committed and really sure. So when Jesus says, "You've got to give up everything to be my disciple," you could look at that from the point of view of saying, Jesus there is saying, don't hold anything particularly precious to you and be prepared to surrender everything that you've got. All your gifts, all your talents, your relationships, surrender all of those things for me. Your money, whatever. Okay, it kind of seems a little bit too close to home when we look at it from that sort of point of view. That's one way of looking at it, being prepared to give up everything. But for me, and as I looked at it, there's another way of looking at this everything. There are things in my life, and I'm sure in your life, that you're holding on to. Things that you don't necessarily feel are particularly good, you don't necessarily feel are particularly healthy, but there is some reason why you cannot give it up. And Jesus is saying, give it up. Give everything to me. Give all the good stuff to me. Give all the bad stuff to me. Just give it to me. Let me deal with it. Let me take it from you. Surrender. Be willing to surrender. Understand what following me will cost you. It will cost you because it's important. It will cost you because it's valuable. And you're so valuable to me that I don't want you to carry on holding on to this stuff that you don't need. You really don't need. Let it go. You see, we are people that are generally averse to taking risks. We don't like taking risks. We want to be safe. We strive for being safe. We surround ourselves with various things to build safety into our lives. We insure ourselves against things going wrong, don't we? We pay our insurances. We pay our protections. We surround ourselves with things that will help us and make us feel safe. But Jesus here is saying, give it up to me. To follow me, you've got to be prepared to put me right at the top of your priorities. And that's difficult when we are more concerned with risk. Jesus is saying, let your faith be stronger. Let your faith in me be stronger than your fears that you have about your lives. Your fears, if you give in to them, will always, always, always talk you around to their way of operating. The enemy will always put the fear there in order to stop you doing something for the Lord. And will always talk you round. And as I thought about this question of everything, giving up everything, surrendering everything, I felt very simply that my salvation is full. As well as being free, it's a full salvation. Jesus gives me everything. Why do I need to hold on to something when he has given me everything? It's a bit like I've got one hand behind my back and I'm saying to the Lord, you can have this, but you're not having this. I don't know why, but I just feel better holding on to this. I don't know why, but I can't let you have this. And if I'm in church, you can't see what's behind my back, can you? And if I'm at home, you can't see what's behind my back and in my hand. And none of us can see what's in the hand of the other person unless they offer it out. But Jesus can see what's behind my back. And Jesus knows what you're holding on to as well. And I want to give you a little example. In my house, I've got two sons that spend a lot of time on their mobile phones. You probably have got similar experiences. One of my sons particularly will come downstairs with his headphones in and his phone in his hand, and he will go, I'll go, morning, and he will not hear me, and so he'll shout a bit louder and he'll stop the phone and go, what? And I go, morning, oh, yeah, morning. And then he'll go off and make himself some breakfast with his phone in his hand, and he'll try and get his pot out, and he'll try and get his cereal out, and he'll try and get the milk out, but he's doing it with one hand, you see, because he's got something else in his hand. And he seems to think that he can do this with one hand. He can do all the things he needs to do with one hand, and the other hand with something else in it. But it doesn't work out like this, because after a while I'll hear a crash or a spill, or some commotion. And I know what's happened. He's dropped the milk. He's knocked the bowl over. And so I always shout out to him, use two hands. Two hands makes things easier. Use both hands. Keep both hands open. And part of that is saying, I'm going to give you everything, Lord. I'm letting you go. You know what? That's great. I'm going to bless you with that now. Go and take that and bless somebody. Or let me take that from you, actually, because you don't need that. I'm going to put something else in there. We seem to be people that say our salvation is full. Our salvation is free. We've been given everything, but yet there's still things that I don't want to give up. And I don't know why that should be. I don't know why I'm afraid of letting go, of letting him take from me. That's the kind of loss that would be a healthy loss in some ways. One of the things that happens when we refuse to give up everything for the kingdom of God is we lose our relevance to the society in which we live in, to the people around us. And Jesus uses the example of salt, losing its saltiness in chapter 14. And he says it's good for nothing. And that's a worry when the Lord says you're not really good for anything at all. So my question to the Lord really this week was to say, okay, Lord, I understand what you're saying. How can I be a genuine person, a real person, a person who is supposed to speak for you, to act for you, to represent you at every time in my life? That was the question that I asked the Lord. And I was persuaded that his answer to that was to say, the best thing you can do is to start looking for me. And that's why I was looking at these verses in Luke 15. You can start looking for me. Because when you feel like you're losing the Lord in some way or another, you're losing your connection with the Lord, you can quite easily say, you know what, I can't see this through in terms of my commitment. I'll go and make my peace with the enemy king. As it says in in chapter 14, you go and make your peace because you can't complete the battle. You haven't got the resource to do it. So it would be better if you settled your peace. The enemy king, the devil, wants us to settle our terms with him instead, to make our peace with him. But if we do that, we lose out. We lose our relevance, we lose our identity, we lose so much more. I don't know what you do when you feel something's missing, something's not quite right. I think it's interesting that when we're not well, we sometimes expect to be able to do the things that we could do, and we're surprised that our bodies don't give us the energy in which to do it. We just can't do it. Something's missing that was there before. Well, in our story, when something was missing, these people had a choice. And their choice was to take some action and to go and find it. To go and find it. When you realise that you're losing out, that you're missing out, you have a choice. The shepherd lost one of his sheep. The woman lost one of her coins. And the father, sadly, lost his son, didn't he? Now the question was it their fault? Was it their fault that they had lost these things? Was it the father's fault that his son decided he wanted to leave? Was it the woman's fault that she'd lost the coin? Was it the shepherd's fault that the sheep had gone off? And they could have sat down and blamed themselves for their loss. They could have said, you know what, I'll just be content with what I have got. Because if you read the story, you'll find that there's 99 other sheep, and you'll find that there's more coins in that house. And you'll even find that there's another son in the story of the prodigal son. And there's loads of servants. I'll be content with what I've got. The shepherd, who reminds us of Jesus, goes out to find the lost sheep. And when he does, he puts the sheep on his shoulders. And the question is, why does he put the sheep on his shoulder? Did he put the sheep on his shoulder so it couldn't run off again? Possibly. But I think he possibly put the sheep on his shoulder because it was injured. And that reminds me that when we leave the safety of the Lord's presence, the comfort of the group, we become easier prey for the devil, who's described as a roaring lion, prowling around looking for whom he may devour, looking to swallow up the lost. I think that's the reason the sheep went on the shoulders, because it was injured. It got into some trouble. And the shepherd comes and carries it. As I say, reminds us of Jesus. The woman in the story loses a coin. What does she do? She lights a lamp. She sweeps the house. I don't know how big her house was. I wouldn't have thought it'd be particularly massive, because we don't read of other people getting involved in the search, do we? She just did this on her own. But we do read about other people in all of these stories who came after the things were found. Remember, when the sheep was found, the shepherd calls his friends and neighbours together. Remember, when the coin was found, the woman calls her friends and neighbours together. Remember, when the son was found, the father hosted a big celebratory party. People are called in for the celebrations, but the actual searching process is the individual who does that. So what responsibility do we take over our loss of something? Give you a little example. I lost my car keys a few months ago. I thought Donna had took them to work by mistake, because we share the driving. The car's on the drive, but there's no keys. So I thought, Donna's took them to work by mistake. I know, I won't say anything. I'll just walk around today. I don't need the car. And when she comes home, just look at the look on her face when she says, "Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot." Well, it was a case of look at the look on my face, because she said, "I haven't got them." I said, "You haven't got them?" I said, "No, I've got them." So then I did what I always do next. I panicked. I realised something was missing, and I panicked. I don't know whether you do that. I thought, what if somebody's taken them? What if I've dropped them outside? What if somebody's worked out that they're for the car? What if somebody comes and takes the car? I start to get really anxious, and the mind's working overtime. Then, after all that panicking, start to pray. Now, you'd thought I'd have done it the other way around, wouldn't you? I'd have prayed first and then leave the panicking. But I started to pray, and I asked God to help me find them. I asked God that He would show me where they were, because I'd run out of options, and that's when I prayed. And that's me being honest with you. I'd run out of my natural options. And a wise person said something to me. It was my wife. And this was a day or so later of not having a car now. For you who have cars, that's terrible, isn't it? But I didn't have a car. So I thought, I don't know what to do. By the way, I retraced all my steps where I might have had the car keys and where I might have put the car keys, but I still didn't find them. So Donna said to me, try looking in a place where you might not expect to find them. What do you mean? She says, go and empty the bins. We've got three bins, like you have. Two for recycling and one for general waste. You know the general waste, that's the one with the dog poo in and the rabbit poo and the sawdust and the food bags and the stuff that's messed up. You know, that's the food waste one. I wasn't looking forward to emptying that bin. Going through all that mess. So I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll leave that, and I'll look at the paper one first. It's the cleanest. Well, I lifted the bin up and guess what? The keys are in the top of the bin. I'd gone to the bin, put something in my hand, I'd done some recycling and I'd lifted the paper bin up, I'd put some paper in and somehow the key had gone in. By the way, we do have a spare set of keys. But guess where they were? They were in Cardiff. My daughter had took them by mistake. So I'd already rung her and said, you'll have to arrange to get the keys back. But then rung and said, oh, we don't need to. I found the key. I was prepared to go through the waste bin eventually if I had to. If I really had to go and trawl through all that waste, I would have done that. I wouldn't have liked to have done it though. So I was really glad that God put me to the place and that the keys were in the nice, neat paper recycling rather than the dog mess, rabbit mess bin. I could have started in the waste bin first, because that's the one that we go to most often. All I would have done then would have opened up the bins, bin bags, spread them all over the floor, made more of a mess, got myself in a mess, got myself upset, wouldn't have been able to find them. And the Lord will sometimes direct us into places that are quite messy. But I'm thankful that when it comes to the important stuff, He will sometimes spare us from that. The Lord is not into the business of getting anxious. He's not in the business of blaming people either for loss. But He is concerned when we don't care about losing something. You see, I cared about losing my car keys because they were important to me. Maybe you've lost something and you thought, well, it doesn't really matter. I'm not going to look for it. It doesn't really matter. You know, there are times in our lives when we lose our connection with the Lord. There are times in our lives where we don't even realise that it's missing. There are times in our hearts where that loss isn't felt as strongly as it should be. There are times when we simply sit around and wait. Wait for the Lord to return that feeling to us. Regard absence as a bit of a temporary thing, something that I'm going through. Well, in our stories today, if they'd have just sat around and hadn't done anything, hadn't taken any action, well, for the shepherd and the woman, it wouldn't have worked. And even the father went out every day looking for his son, waiting patiently, expecting the return of his son, who'd taken that willing step to lose himself. And the son eventually turned around from his mess and he walked back that road. He returned back. God sent his son to us to seek us, to save us, to return us to him. So are we prepared to go through a thought process of understanding our loss, of owning our loss before God and being honest with Him? Because that's the starting point when you will find what's missing. That's the starting point to remember where you last had it, where you put it down. And hopefully it will be a time of rejoicing to find it again. You might want to avoid the messy stuff, just like I wanted to avoid the messy stuff. God is really good at stopping us getting too into the messy stuff and raking up all the bad stuff again in our lives and going over all the mistakes that we've made. But you know, there will be times when finding Him again and finding who we are supposed to be in Him again is a price and a journey that we have to take and be willing to make. The son in our last story realised what he'd lost. He'd realised that his life had taken a wrong direction, and as I say, he went back and retraced his steps. I don't know whether he had to go back exactly through all the places that he'd gone to before when his pockets were full. I don't know whether it was the places that were his shame because of how he conducted himself, I think we can work out some of the things that he spent his money on wasn't particularly morally good. But he went back. And you know, as he's taking that journey back to his father, he's getting nearer and nearer. And he's talking to himself and he's saying, I'm prepared to lose everything. I'm prepared to lose my status as a son. I'm prepared to lose any reputation I've got. I've already lost the money. I'm prepared to lose my pride, my character. I'm prepared to become a servant. I'm prepared to give everything up in order to gain my place in the Father's home. He knew his dad's house. He knew the hospitality his dad had shown. He knew the blessings that were there. As Jesus told this story over 2,000 years ago, it would have been culturally very different from the way in which we would like to think we'd behave if our kids mess up. Would we be the sort of people that would say, you've made your bed, you've got to lie in it? Or would we perhaps be more reconciliatory, more helpful, more supportive? You know, okay, we all mess up. I think that's how we would like to be. And I'm sure listening to this story, the tax collectors and the sinners would have sat there listening and thought, I hope this has got a good ending. I hope this son is blessed. They were hoping for that good news. And the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, they were there hoping as well. I hope he gets what he deserves, his son, when he comes back. I hope the law is given to him with both barrels. I hope he's thrown out. Yeah. There's unexpected results here, isn't there? Unexpected the results. And that's entirely expected when it comes to Jesus. The unexpected is entirely expected when it comes to Jesus. He surprises us in so many ways and in so many relationships with people. As the lost is found, is searched out, is brought back, comes back repentant. The hidden treasure is revealed in all its preciousness in terms of the coin. The shepherd goes out and returns the sheep. The son makes his decision to return, to willingly come back after willingly walking away. With God, the unexpected becomes our expected reality. Never lose out on that truth. And that to me means that God can do so much more. God can surprise us. We need to seek for the presence of God every day, in every place, and we'll find him. Okay, David.